Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Stafford Betty, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And before we get started, I think we would both like to wish a belated happy birthday to Alexander Imich, who turned 109 years old, I believe about a week or two ago.
I think it was February 4th.
And for those who don't know, Alexander Imich is a paranormal researcher, a parapsychologist. He's been one of the pioneers in the field. We had the pleasure of meeting him several times when he was a young 106 and very spry and acute. And he's still active. He still lives in Manhattan and he's just a marvel, and we wish him many more birthdays. Funny to say that somebody it's 109, but who knows how long we can keep going.
Cool. Well, he was in great shape when we saw him a few years ago, and apparently he's still doing well, and he's still doing his work. And I believe in a recent interview, he managed to say that it's not his belief in the afterlife that it is responsible for his longevity, but the fact that he continues to do work.
Right. Yeah.
So let's not sit idle.
Yeah, you think he sat back like when he was around 65 and somebody asked him like why he wasn't retired. He's lived another lifetime after that. Right?
He's had a very colorful life, and he started back in the 20s. Now he's a very young man then.
Yeah.
Back in the 20s, investigating survival of consciousness. Got very interested in this stuff.
Yeah. And not too many people were investigating such things scientifically in the 1920s. And they have thought about it, as people have throughout the ages, but very few people in the early times, like the 1920s, 1910s, were conducting research, although there was a Society of Psychical Research, you know, in England and then in the United States.
Well, I just want to add one thing, because this is interesting, an interesting statement that or thought that he conveyed when he was doing his work. When he first started back in the 20s, and he started interacting with mediums, and he was a scientist, so he knew how to control things and make sure that there was no cheating going on, he was amazed that the scientific world would not consider this kind of dignified research. And he says he began to wonder why his fellow scientists were interested in investigating things that were paled in comparison with the question of life after death. He decided then to devote his life to parapsychology.
Yeah, and, you know, we're almost a century later, a lot of today's scientists are saying the same thing.
100 years. Wow, 100. Maybe that's why he's hanging around, just to make sure that we get the job done.
Yeah, I mean,
already.
And still, I mean, you know, there's an incredible amount of research that's been done over that century, and the data, even in the last 20 and 30 years, has been overwhelming, and still many of the researchers are ostracized or not paid attention to when they talk about things that go against, fly in the face of materialist science. So not much has changed.
And in his last book, which was written in 1995, called Incredible Tales of the Paranormal, he says how much easier it would be to live through the pain and misery of our existence on this planet if we were sure that they were only temporary ills.
Yeah, you know, and then, and that, you know, leads into another question that we're going to ask our guest in a few minutes. But there are many people that when we talk about things like survival and the afterlife, that they'll say, "Oh no, no, we're not meant to know about such things," and they think that you're somehow flying in the face of the divine if you go searching for what happens after. After we die, I guess a lot of that has to do with religious beliefs.
I know, but it sounds so silly. If that's your religious belief and you believe that God is this great being that controls everything, then if he doesn't want you to know about it, you won't know about it. But we're knowing about it.
We're knowing about it, and, you know, if you believe in the design, then we're knowing about it purposely. I mean, we have spirit communicators we're going to learn about during this show that have conveyed information about what it's like. And you see, obviously, mediums, we know, bring information from people in spirit that shows that there's an afterlife. People that have near-death experiences come back and report their so-called, you know, travels to these other realms. You know, we know people have deathbed visions. You know, all of these things, electronic voice phenomena. You know, if we weren't meant to be, why would the Creator allow it to happen, right? So you can't really use the argument both ways, you know. But, I mean, do you ever give thought to that? I mean, did you ever feel that it somehow we're...
That it was off-limits?
Off-limits?
Never. Yeah. I mean, it was just so much a part of logic. To me, anyway, that how could it possibly be off limits? Yeah. Don't you want to know what happens to you after you die?
And as Dr. Imich suggested in that article, if we did have the knowledge, and if we did find out that the way we live our physical lives affects our future existence, then I can't help but think that the world would be a better place.
Has to be.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe that that's part of who we are, and that's part of the meaning of our lives, and the purpose is to catch glimpses of this and to move into opening our minds to a greater reality, you know, the true reality, instead of this dreamlike.
Right, and so really the two questions people ask the most are really the same question, is what are we doing here? Or what happens after we die? It's really the same answer.
Right. And, you know, we'll go to break in a couple of minutes. I know that you wanted to mention, you know, you're going to be talking a little bit later about some of the events. The 2012 calendar is getting into full swing. And we often get inquiries from all over the world, but, you know, specifically in the United States, and people want to know why we have a great many events on the East Coast. And, you know, it's purely economics and volunteerism. So we have, since we're based in New York, the few volunteers that we have are also, you know, based here. We have some in other areas, but predominantly they're on the East Coast. So we would like nothing more than to bring different events and lectures and medium demonstrations to various parts of the country, but we need volunteers. We're an all-volunteer organization. Nobody gets paid, and so if you'd like to bring an event to your area, we're more than happy to talk to you. If you
right, and just say, it's great to get a phone call from somebody in Kentucky saying we want an event, and they're willing to volunteer, but one volunteer doesn't make an event.
Right.
They've got to come, they've got to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to volunteer, but now I'm going to go out and get other people to volunteer too.
Right.
It has to be a group effort, which is why we have events in Massachusetts and Connecticut, New Jersey, New York. It sounds like the East Coast, but that seems to be where all the volunteers are coming forward from.
Yeah, and we do move around our conference every year to a different part of the country.
Hoping to get more volunteers.
Yeah, that's part of it. Well, we're going to go to break now, and when we come back, we're going to have our wonderful guest, Dr. Stafford Beatty. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few moments.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Beatty. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Stafford Beatty earned his Ph.D. in theology from Fordham University. He teaches religious studies at California State University in Bakersfield, and he has evolved into a world expert on afterlife studies. Originally a specialist in Asian religious thought and the philosophy of religion, he branched out into paranormal research when he found that the big questions about life's meaning were unanswered in the safe world of academia. In his book, The Afterlife Unveiled, he's assembled what he believes to be the most significant examples of channeled information from the afterlife. Dr. Betty believes that this information, which contains both philosophical and descriptive accounts of the world beyond, provides a map from which we can all enhance our lives. Welcome, Dr. Betty.
Oh, thanks so much. That was quite flattering, Bob.
Well, you deserve it. You know, you've collected a very strong collection of channel reports that describe the afterlife. And, of course, when it comes to channeling, the skeptic will often say, well, we can't tell the difference. You know, maybe it's coming from the mind of the medium versus, you know, true spirit. And do you believe that it's the similarities of all these accounts that you've amassed that make it evidential that these reports are indeed coming from spirit?
I do. I think that's probably, yeah, that would be the main piece of evidence that convinces me that, and the word ultimately has to be probably does come from real beings in a real spiritual environment. There is just such uncanny similarity. I mean, after you've read 20 of these accounts from 20 different sources, you can guess pretty well what the 21st one's going to be like. It can even become somewhat tedious if you read enough of these books. On the other hand, there are interesting dissimilarities between the spirits who are coming to us because, you know, each spirit is as individual and unique as each one of us is. And so they report different experiences, but in a common environment. I'd put it that way. And, yes, that has been tremendously evidential for me.
Yeah. Do you think that the majority of people who believe in survival also believe in God? Are they mutually exclusive, or is one go with the other?
Yeah, I think that they usually do go together. They don't have to. It's not rigorously necessary or logical that they do so, but probably I would say that 95% of the people who believe in an afterlife also believe in God. And there are certainly hints of some kind of a divine reality in this literature. Though it's certainly not the kind of God we get in typical scriptures.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, I mean, as a university professor, I guess when you're teaching undergraduate classes, I mean, most of your students are, you know, in the upper teens and early 20s. And do you find that they're more or less, are they more or less open than let's say, their adult counterparts when it comes to a belief in the afterlife or psi phenomena in general?
Yeah. No, they're less open than let's put it this way. There's a sizable coterie of it of adults in their 30s and 40s and 50s who've completely made up their mind that material reality is the only reality we can trust as real. But I would say this, that my experience with young students shows to me that they are just surprised by the literature that I throw at them. They're rather stunned. They don't know what to make of it at first. Many of them are Christians, and many of them are fundamentalist Christians, and they're frightened by what they hear, and they sense that this is not for them. But on the other hand, there are many open-minded people of all ages in my classes, and certainly many of them are young, who are excited by this and see for the first time that, you know, maybe religion has something going for it after all, if this is the kind of afterlife that is available.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, you know, after reading your book, I know Fran got very excited because she read Testimony of Light quite a number of years ago, and she's been quoting from it, you know, for forever.
Yep.
And then when I told her, Dr. Betty actually incorporates that book into your university classes, you know, she was thrilled. So you find that book extremely illuminating, to say the least.
I do. I think it's the best of the kind that I've ever read. I find it immensely inspiring, for one thing. It just brings out all kinds of spiritual excitement, and it also demands that we take life seriously and take morality seriously. It's a superb book, and I cannot recommend it enough. I don't use it anymore because I use my own book now, but if my book didn't exist, I would definitely be using it still. And, of course, one of the chapters in my book deals with that wonderful account from the spirit world.
Yeah, and I think the most the biggest message, which is consistent in all of these accounts that you put together, is that there is a purpose and meaning to our lives, and that, you know, if life is a continuum and we just go to other realms, our existence in these other realms, if you believe the channel reports, is very much dependent upon the way we live our physical lives, don't you think?
It absolutely, absolutely is. That's the point that you're making now is one of the 9 of 44 points that I make in the summary paragraph at the end of my book. And let me just read a short paragraph that perfectly gets at what you've just said, Bob. Yeah. The Creator... and you know, I won't call the Creator God, places souls in the difficult environment of earth because he, she, it loves them. We don't have a good pronoun for God. He wants to see them grow, so I use the conventional he. He wants to see them grow in wisdom, love, and power. He knows that the only way to bring out the best in a soul is to challenge it in the same way that a good teacher challenges her students. Ultimately, the Creator wants us to become as much like himself, herself, as possible to grow into near divine-like stature. Soul building or character development is the whole point of our sojourn, both on earth and beyond. The use we make of our free will is absolutely crucial to our progress at all levels.
Yeah, I guess that about, you know, that about says it all. And a lot of the reports talk about... not a hell per se, but
right.
Dimensions. Whether it's, I guess, from self judgment, where people are in these dense environments, they just don't have any desire to move towards the light, so to speak. Right?
Yes, that is rather shocking when you first read that. But it makes sense when you think of all the people on our planet who have not the slightest interest in diviner things, in the light, in any kind of illumination. They just want to sit back and cruise and get by and get away with as much of selfish pleasure as the world will afford them, and that's it. And
yeah.
So these people end up doing the same thing in the world to come. Even though that the place that they find themselves in is very far from a radiantly joyous place, it's just, however, where they're most comfortable.
Yeah, and I think what's also striking, I think if you asked a great majority of people would tell you that they, when you go to this heaven that they believe in, that you suddenly gain, you know, infinite wisdom and you lose personality and
yeah.
Of bliss. But, you know, you're in the Afterlife Unveiled, a lot of the accounts tell us that, you know, people in the world beyond have flaws, don't they?
They do. It's not a true heaven, and that word is usually not used to describe the afterworld of even the best of spirits. You get the impression that we're in for a very, very long time of soul growth. This is not something that's going to take place in a lifetime or two, or even in centuries, or even in millennia. We have an enormously long future of soul growth, and where we will be in 10,000 years, I doubt that we will look back and see ourselves as even being recognizable compared to where we are at that point. So, yeah, there's an enormous amount of growing to do, and that implies, of course, that we know relatively little at this point, and have an enormous amount of growing to do before we can be ready for any place that's truly heavenly. So we end up in an environment that is good. Sometimes I refer to it as simply the good land, because for the good person, there is the possibility of great soul growth over there, and at least reward for a life lived well on Earth. And that may lead eventually to some kind of rebirth back on the Earth plane, or one can continue to go forward into higher worlds. But one can't just stay stationary forever at the next level after death.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are really hung up on, you know, if there is an afterlife, then there must be afterlife justice, you know, and
yeah.
And that's where That's puzzling to a lot of people, you know. So, in your opinion, from the reports that you've read, if you have somebody that's done a lot of well, you know, the classic example is Adolf Hitler.
Sure.
So, you know, assuming that there is no, you know, deity that passes judgment.
Right.
A burning fiery hell.
Right.
So there, you know, is somebody like that given the opportunity for growth at some point, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a wonderful thing about this study. There is no permanent hell. There is no permanent condemnation. As a matter of fact, it's not about condemnation. It's simply the kind of being that you have made yourself into after many, many choices, and those choices become eventually habitual, and you turn into the kind of person who does those kinds of things habitually, and they can be good or evil or someplace in between. And it's not as if you bring some sort of a ledger into the next world that where your crimes are ticked off. It's the kind of being you are, and if you are the kind of person that Adolf Hitler formed himself into, you're going to have tremendous difficulty in the world to come. You're not going to find that at all a happy place for you. You're going to have to do an enormous amount of changing.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, first of all, confront the fact that you have made many bad decisions, and you're going to have to regret them. And at that point, you're going to have to determine to not do them again and to go in a different direction from that point on. And that will require a great deal of humble service, and there's always room for service at every level of life here on this planet and in the world to come. So there are many ways in which the soul can regenerate itself through humble service. And yeah.
Dr. Betty, would you mind taking a call from a listener?
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Okay, we have Marion.
Marion.
On line one.
Hello, Marion.
Well, I was just listening, trying to listen, but
okay.
I can't get, they timed me out on my computer and I can't get you back on again. I really am interested in what the spirits, what do they do after the, I'm convinced they're there. My husband convinced me that he was alive after he was dead, but I'd like to know, you know, what is their life like? What do they do?
Well, that's what I describe in my book, The Afterlife Unveiled, and in my novel, The Imprisoned Splendor, I make the scaffolding that I provide in the earlier book come to life through two main characters, one of them an atheist, but not a bad person, but a person who scoffed at all thoughts of a spirit world and an afterlife, and a suicide. What happens to people like that? And what I do in my novel is...
Yeah, I have one of each on the other side.
Okay. You have one of each. Is that right? You have an atheist and a suicide on the other side.
I have one who believed that he was going to hell if there was anything on the other side,
okay.
but he didn't think he thought that was the biggest crock he ever heard of.
Yeah, I suspect that he is in for a bit of a surprise, and hopefully it's a happy surprise. You don't have to be a believer or a theist to enjoy a pleasant and constructive afterlife. It's not your beliefs that form your character as much as it is simply your habits and your actions. So if he was
right.
A good person in spite of his beliefs, which may have been wrong, that's not held against him. It's his character,
he
his moral character
person,
that means everything.
He was a good person, but he had a lot of bad habits.
Well, that's going to count against him. He's going to have to work those off and work through them. And that, of course, is what we all have to do at every level. I'm working, too.
Right. Yeah, we're all working right here as hard as we can. But I don't know what they keep telling me. You have to stay here until you finish what you came here to do, and I haven't the faintest idea what I came here to do.
Let me read you something from my first book, The Afterlife Unveiled, and this really addresses where we all are. And this comes from that wonderful book, my favorite book, the one I was just talking about. Somewhere in the deeps of my mind, two blueprints are brought forward into my consciousness. This is a woman, a nun actually, an Anglican nun who's been dead just a little while, a couple of months, and these are her earliest experiences. These are so clear that I can literally take them out, materialize them, and study them. One, the first of these blueprints, is the perfect idea with which my spirit went bravely into incarnation. The other is the resultant of only a partially understood plan, in fact, my life as it was actually lived. First of all, the mind looks at the whole comparison and sets the blueprints side by side. This is the first shock, a true humbling of yourself to find that you did so little when you would have done so much, that you went wrong so often when you were sure that you were right. During this experience, the whole cycle of your life term unfolds before you in a kaleidoscopic series of pictures. During the crisis, one seems to be entirely alone. Yours is the judgment. You stand at your own bar of judgment. You make your own decisions. You take your own blame. You are the accused, the judge, and the jury. Magnificent.
Yeah. Well, Marion,
yes, that's
thank you, Marion.
Kind of what my husband. Yeah.
Yeah. Marion, thanks for calling. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. You know, Dr. Betty, one of my favorite chapters in the afterlife unveiled, it's an account, an afterlife account from you, a young Texan, as you...
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he describes, and Marion was asking what life is like, and he describes, of course, we're entities of thought, but there's much, you know, there's an interest in the arts, and there's an interest in learning, and, you know, artists still paint, and musicians still compose.
Yes, yes.
The best was when he said, oh, yeah, pretty much, I just attended a new drama by Shakespeare, you know, you know, or go to a concert by Mozart. And so
right.
The people that, that we knew in the physical have not stopped in the world beyond.
That's right.
Is that surprising when you read that?
Not at all. I've read enough of that literature to know that there's a continuation between conditions here and conditions over there. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to come into contact with Beethoven's 13th Symphony in the afterworld. I can't imagine what Beethoven would prefer to do over creating more music when it's his turn to go over there. I would also be very surprised to find him there, however, because I think he's either moved on or he's come back to Earth to do something else.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that struck me was that there was a common theme in the reports that people in the afterworld tend to congregate with others that are of like minds and beliefs.
Yep. Yes, that is true. That shows up everywhere in this literature. We gravitate towards people we feel comfortable around. I do not expect to find myself surrounded by Muslims, and I don't think that Muslims would particularly care to have me join their particular, shall we say, sector of the afterlife. It's not as if the afterlife is just one world. It's a combination of many sectors, possibly as many as thousands of sectors. People are drawn to their own kind. Actually, the account by the young Texan puts this extremely well. When you ask him, where is this world, he puts it this way. The spirit world begins very near the earth and extends millions of miles beyond. It surrounds yours on all sides, like the atmosphere does the globe, and every nation has its counterpart in spirit surrounding it, in connection with that part over or nearest its earthly place of residence. So what this is saying is that, in other words, most Hindus live in the part of the spirit world that hovers over India, and most Chinese over China. And as we've seen, each region extends indefinitely outward, so there's plenty of room.
Yeah, I was very surprised when I read that. That's the first time I've ever read an account like that. You know, that
yes.
People, there's a correlation, you know, between the... physical, you know, geography and
yeah. No, I've read that elsewhere. This is not unique by any means.
Yeah, the we have been talking with Dr. Stafford Betty in his book, The Afterlife Unveiled: What the Dead Are Telling Us About Their World. We're going to take a short break, and we come back, we're going to continue this fascinating discussion. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll learn more about the unseen world from a guest, Dr. Stafford Betty.
Grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all. The knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty. This show is sponsored by the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income that they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 900 online stores like Adidas, Adobe, Apple, then a portion of your spending will again come back donated to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. We have a couple of upcoming events that are already on the calendar and the website. The first one up is March 30th. It's a Friday night at our conference room in Oceanside, New York. It is Connecting with Your Child Across the Veil for Bereaved Parents. It would be conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified medium Kim Russo, and there are only 3 spots left at this event. So rush over to the website, make your reservations now. Then coming up after that, Friday, April 20th, again at the conference room in Oceanside, we have visitation rights at the workshop for anyone who has lost a loved one and wishes to connect with those on the other side. It is conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified medium Bobby Allison, and that will be both events are in the evening. One is at 7, one is at 7:30. The information is on the website. And our Holiday Earth raffle is in full swing. The winners will be chosen on Earth Day, April 22nd. It's $5 a chance. You will win one of 5 medium readings with Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Tracy Bray, Dave Campbell, or Angelina Diana. And it goes on. You could buy more chances and spend a little less money per raffle. So go to the website, and you've got to be in it to win it. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Stafford Betty, the author of The Afterlife Unveiled, What the Dead Are Telling Us About Their World. Dr. Betty, we often get asked if people, once they transition to the afterlife, do they continue to remain interested in their loved ones that are still in the physical? So, I mean, how would you answer that?
Oh, without a question, they do. All of the, I think without an exception, all of the spirit books that I've read talk about the possible loneliness that spirits feel over on the other side. There's a lot of time there. Most of them don't sleep, and there are times when they do miss their loved ones. And most of the accounts say how gratifying it is for the loved ones back on Earth to remember them. It may be through prayer, it may be just through conversation, or just thinking about the spirits. What happens is that telepathically the spirits hook up with these thoughts, and sometimes even travel down to sit by our sides as unseen ghosts or spirits or specters, just to be near us. So there's a great deal of connectedness between their world and our world. They stay very interested in us if they love us.
Yeah, and they also a common theme is that a lot of these spirit entities are telling us that many of our achievements here on Earth have been inspired telepathically from them.
It really is. It's kind of it's kind of deflating to think of how unoriginal we are if
right.
We really are receiving stations for the great thoughts that come from the higher world.
Right.
I know Brahms thought that most of his great music came to him as simply a receiver. He could hear it. It was as if someone were telling him what to write when he produced his great music. Mozart also spoke that way from time to time, so did Dvorak. So many of the really great romantic composers seem to have had literal muses, spirit entities who connected through them, who had been musicians in their lives and had come into contact with more beautiful strains of music and wanted to bring it back down to the earth.
Hmm.
So that's quite an interesting thought. And
yeah, and we are truly interconnected.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, can we take another call?
Absolutely.
Okay,
we have Janice from North Carolina on line 4.
Janice.
Hi.
Hi, Janice. You're on with Dr. Betty.
Hi.
Hello.
My husband committed suicide, and it's been a year, and I feel like I feel him. I feel like he, it was sudden, and it was from depression. And there was no note, but I feel like I need to reach out to him. And I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Bob, would you I didn't quite hear that. Could you reconstruct that for me?
Yeah.
What is Janice feeling?
Janice, this was, did you mention this was your
husband.
Your husband. Her husband, you know, had committed suicide, and Janice,
okay.
She feels him, but she'd like to reach out to him, and she was wondering,
yes,
if you had any suggestions on how to reach out to him in the afterlife.
Absolutely. She should certainly reach out to him. It may well be that he is asking, perhaps even somewhat desperately, for her prayers and just for her love. It's not as if a suicide has condemned himself to some kind of an eternal hell. That is not the case at all. It's a great mistake, of course, to take one's own life in most cases. And I can't judge what the motive in this case was. However, a soul like that, a spirit entity like that, is in need of, if anything, more love and more support than ordinary folk who go in the usual way. So I would say, have at it, and talk to him, and let him know how much you love him and miss him and care for him, and ask for the spirits over there, perhaps his protector spirits, to come to him and help him. Ask that he be sent to the light, that he be attracted to the light, because he may feel that he is unworthy of the light. He may not have forgiven himself for what he did, and he needs to learn how to do that. And there are spirits over there, we can call them missionary spirits, if you will, who will help him go into the light. And so it may well be that, Janice, you can help that happen.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Janice. And
thank you, and good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, take
thank
care.
You.
Okay, we have a, who's our next call?
We have another call. We have a call from Ron from Utah on line two.
Well, Ron?
Okay. Go ahead, Ron.
Hello. I guess my call, and I don't know how to articulate it real well, is more philosophical. I had an older son die about 7 years ago, but my biggest question is, I've done a lot of reading, and the idea of maybe that everything is one and we're destined to come back into the one, which would be God. And my question would be, do you have any ideas philosophically why and how did this all start? Did it have something to do with the Big Bang, et cetera? And those are some of my questions.
It's interesting.
Those
are philosophical questions. And, you know, it's amazing, but I don't find those answers in this literature. And it's not as if we can expect spirit entities on the other side to be omniscient. They're anything but omniscient. They have to work for knowledge just as we do. And they don't have access to information, oftentimes, any more than we do. So if I were to engage you in that kind of a conversation, it would not be based on what I have read in the accounts that I cover in my book, The Afterlife Unveiled. However, your speculations are probably every bit as good as mine, and I have wondered those thoughts many a time. So all I can say is enjoy.
Well, what is your opinion on that, on those questions? Kind of just your
personal opinion. In other words, how did the world get started? How did the universe get started?
And why of all this? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that these are my thoughts about this. I think there is way too much evidence of, shall I say, order. An extraordinary, splendid order in the universe for it to be accounted for mechanistically without some kind of guiding intelligence. So I think of the Creator as being an intelligence of massive proportions and possessed of incredible power. And from that point, you know, we can ask ourselves, why in the world has it taken 13.7 billion years from the great event of the Big Bang to where we are now? Evidently, the Creator is very patient. He's in no rush to evolve beings like us. And I think his whole purpose, though, is to evolve beings like us. There's far more value in a human being than in the rings of Saturn, however beautiful the rings of Saturn may be, because the rings of Saturn are unconscious, and we are conscious, and we're more like the Creator than the rings of Saturn. That's a start.
Okay. That's a start. So, kind of what you're saying, and a lot of stuff I've read, is that somehow it's, in a way, it's all consciousness, and we're part of that consciousness.
Yeah. I think that...
Would that be a good way to...
Absolutely, and I think there is a lot of truth in that. It seems to me that who we are, you know, we are these conscious beings, and we are conscious precisely because there is that little spark of consciousness that comes out of the great consciousness and that gives us our identity as the unique beings that we are. Without that great consciousness to give us these sparks, to shoot out these sparks from it or him or her, we wouldn't exist as conscious beings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think of each of us as a kind of a tentacle coming out from the great octopus body that you can call God, and he operates through each of the tentacles, and we are, each one of us, one of those zillions of tentacles coming out from the Creator.
That's quite an explanation. Yeah, that's great.
Just a simile, that's all it is.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
And, yeah, and of course, a lot of today's physicists are speaking in very much like the terms you're talking about, that consciousness itself is the ground of all being, you know?
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And in the book, you also have an account from, you know, the great psychical researcher F.W. Myers. And what I got out of that is that, you know, Myers believed, everybody's always asking, what's our purpose? What's our purpose in life? And he believed, I believe, that the main purpose in life is to expand our minds and gain, you know, the true concept of reality. And this physical is this little dream blip, you know. The true reality lies beyond the physical, and perhaps
absolutely.
That is... Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, very much so. You know, I've got Myers's one of the quotations, one of the most remarkable of the quotations from that remarkable book called The Road to Immortality. I think that book of... Just a minute. Hold on a minute.
Well, we've lost our guests, but...
why not I continue at least with our healing energy circle prayer.
Okay.
May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicky Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen Lafada, Joanne Gerber, and Lynn LeClaire. And now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010.
Right. And our guest tonight was Dr. Stafford Betty. His book, The Afterlife Unveiled, is available through Amazon. There is a link on our website. It has a lot of very interesting thoughts in it. I'd advise you to pick it up. And with that, I would like to tell you that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.